for reasons I really can't explain, my Carolina experience is deeply personal and something I have seldom really examined. It was a great time for me, but best viewed from afar. But when a media mogul puts a bite on you, I guess you have to respond. I was born in Panther Branch in Wake County, on land that had been in our family since before the Revolution. Lake Benson in Garner was Rand's Mill in the old days. And my birthday was the day the war started. That's WW2. That day, Hitler invaded Poland, and I was born. My great uncle was the doctor that delivered me and suggested to my mother that she name me Adolf. I'm delighted that she was an Anglophile, and I didn't have to deal with that. I tell you all this because without the Garner part, the Carolina part really doesn't make sense. Garner was very small in those days. I was kin to about everybody that lived there. In 1950, Garner had 1,200 people. Raleigh was about 65,000. Chapel Hill was 9,200. Eastern North Carolina was mainly an agricultural region. My father had been at Camp Lejeune, or Camp Lejeune, they call it now, I think, during the war, and came back and went into the electrical contracting business. He'd gone to NC State during the Depression, but hadn't graduated. He was every bit as big a State fan as I have ever been a Carolina fan. My mother had gone to Meredith and got a degree in music, but her two brothers had gone here to Chapel Hill. I did about everything a boy did in those days. I picked a little cotton, which was the worst job I ever had. I worked in tobacco. I carried the morning and the evening papers. I hopped cars at the Toot and Tell It. Sold eggs door to door. I was a page in the legislature for over 2 months and almost flunked the eighth grade for being gone to Raleigh so much. And from the age of 10, I did electrical work. I finished at Garner High School in 1957 as Carolina won the national championship, beating Kansas. My high school performance was indicative of my scholastic career to come. I finished in the middle of a class that numbered 88, but I was in the Honor Society. I was awarded a regular Naval Scholarship, ROTC scholarship, to come here for college. My brother Walter was 3 years older than me, and he had been in the Marine Corps after high school, and so he came to Carolina in the fall of 56, a year ahead of me. Walt and I had considered Dartmouth for reasons I really can't remember. But for me to have gone to Dartmouth would have been like putting seal clothes on a hog. Our father felt that he had been a complete failure when both of his boys came to Chapel Hill, and then our younger sister did also. His grandfather, Oscar Ripley Rand, had graduated here in 1854, a fact that my mother, who was an undercover agent for Carolina, was always eager to remind him. Life in Garner was out of the rural South at a time far distant from here. We kept a cow in the backyard, and I milked that damn thing twice every day. Eastern North Carolina was a male-dominated, completely segregated society. When I went to Chapel Hill in the fall of 57, my world completely changed. I have said it was like going to the far side of the moon before, where I had never been, and it really was. I ran with Walt and Fred Hutchinson, who was an older veteran who had been a graphic designer but had come back to Chapel Hill to get his AB degree. We lived on the third floor of ACOP in a small room that was all right because none of us had much. That first fall was a mystical time for me. As fall comes every year, I go back to that time in my mind as clearly as if it were yesterday. I joined the fraternity that Walt and my cousins were in, and I loved all the goings on. Jim Tatum was coaching football, Frank McGuire basketball, and all was right with the world. Chancellor Acock, who is my personal hero, because of the Speaker Ban Law, took over for Chancellor House in 1957, and Chancellor House stayed around to play the harmonica and to teach. I can't go into much detail about my education at that time because I was a rather poor student. I didn't care for foreign language, math, and the sciences. So you see, my path was a touch rocky. I did enjoy ROTC. I was on the drill team and formed a lifelong friendship with Admiral Norton. You could flunk out in those days, as a good number did, but thank God I missed that experience. Barely. In the summer of 1958, the Admiral and I went aboard the USS Canberra, CAG-2, a guided missile cruiser, and set out for the North Atlantic, going to Spain, Sweden, and the Netherlands. We went to a bullfight in Spain, pulling for the bull. From Sweden, we went down to Copenhagen, and then we went to Amsterdam, and from there we went to the World's Fair in Brussels. I was in about the same category as a seaman as I was in a student. And so in the late summer after we returned, my progress was evaluated, and I received a letter that our nation's defense forces no longer required me. I still have the letter. That was quite a blow to my ego, my self-esteem, and to my finances, since the scholarship paid most of the cost of college. My parents were really proud of me. My mother, who was the duty paymaster, sat me down and said, "Okay, old boy, here's the deal. We'll pay tuition, room, buy the books you can conclusively prove you have to have, and give you $3.50 a week on which to live." Now, some of you might think this is a little low, but I can tell you, you can make it on that. Pickle relish, peanut butter and jelly, and one of those long loaves of bread will carry you a long way. On Sunday night, a friend and I would go to a roasted chicken place in Durham, where for 79 cents you could get 2 pieces of chicken and all the rolls and honey you could eat. I could eat $3 or $4 worth of rolls and honey. The second semester I got $5 a week, and I got a job at the UNC cafeteria uptown that paid for my meals. I was in big money then, since I didn't tell anybody I had a job. But I took my schoolwork a little more seriously in my sophomore year. The first semester I held my own. I started up a little in the second semester. In the summer of 1959, I came out. We also impeached the editor of the Daily Tar Heel my sophomore year. He wrote some bad stuff about Sonny Jim Tatum, who suddenly died that summer from Rocky Mountain spotted fever. I made a D in French in summer school that year. It was the best grade I ever made because I didn't have to take any more foreign language. I was out of the general college and could declare my major. I still have the dream that finals are tomorrow, and I really need to buy the book. All this may seem a bit depressing to the modern observer, but let me tell you, I loved every day of it. I was getting into some poli sci, history, and English literature, things that I really enjoyed. But it is a great deal of sadness, I tell you, that I don't have anything like a Julie London story. One of my favorite memories was during the second semester of my sophomore year. I had a state government political science class. One day I went to sleep in class and woke up as a professor who'd seen me asleep called on me and asked me a question he hoped would embarrass me. I'd been a page in the legislature, an observer of government, and had actually studied. So I answered him forwards and backwards and went all through it. And after class, I went up and apologized to him and told him with a straight face that I'd been up late studying. He appeared to accept that and then told me he was considering recommending me for the honors program, and he asked me what my GPA was. I told him if I did real well that semester, I hoped to get it up to a C. He almost threw up, but I assured him that I knew the deal, for him not to worry, I'd be all right. As I went to my junior year, I was taking classes that I really enjoyed. Dean Godfrey, who was the dean of the faculty, taught English history and political science courses. I took everything that he taught that I could get to. Dr. Loeffler, Ray Dawson, Dr. Billy Jenkins, all the poli sci and history teachers were absolutely wonderful. I deeply regret that I never took Dr. Harlan or Honey Bear Hobbs to improve my GPA. But I did take one course where the professor called you in individually and went over your grades and asked you what you thought you deserved. I asked for an A that I thought the facts could support. I was applying to law school and all and thought an A would be good. And he asked me if I needed an A to graduate or if I was down quality points. And I told him no. So he said, how about you taking a B? He said, if I give too many A's, they don't like it, and some of these guys are going to have to get an A. And he assured me, of all people, that a B was really a good grade. So how could I say no after that? I had always been pretty sure I'd go to law school. I was two things you needed to be then to go to law school. I was white, and I was a man. In my law school class, there was one woman and two African Americans. Most women didn't come to Carolina until their junior year, and there were only a very small number of African Americans on the campus in those days. After my junior year, I worked for the electrical contractor on the first building in the Research Triangle. This was a good job for the summer. And during the two summers in law school, I worked for the electrical contractor on the high-rise dorms down here on South Campus. There's a room over there that's got a light in one corner of the room. I made a mistake measuring one day. I became great friends with the university architect who supervised construction and then wired the house he was building during my last year in law school. I had Dallas Cameron as my helper. I don't know if any of y'all knew Dallas. He was in the FBI and then ran the administrative office of the court and was in law school in my class. I had Dallas as my helper because he could stand on the floor. He was a very tall guy and drill holes in the ceiling without a ladder. We didn't have much equipment. But I loved law school. There was no foreign language other than a bit of Latin, which was pretty funny. There was no math lab courses. But our class produced a four-term governor, a 12-term congressman, my brother Walter, who had come back, several major corporate counsels, and a bunch of good guys who became great lawyers. My class presided over the dismantling of the old guard. We had Van Hecke, Weddock, Albert Coates, Dean Brandis, John Dalzell, Frank Hamp, Seymour Werfel, Professor Breckenridge, Brad, Freddie B. McCall, and all these guys left about the time we graduated. Dan Pollitt, who many of you know, Dirty Dan Dobbs, who Orville Faubus had run out of Arkansas, John Scott and a few others who shall remain nameless, were coming in about the time. Judge Dixon Phillips came our first year and later became dean. He told me he always really liked our class because it had a sense of humor. My second year in law school, we had a professor from the University of Texas, Dr. Hubert Winston Smith, who had a medical degree and a law degree from Harvard, come and talk about a program he ran in Crested Butte, Colorado in the summer. That really intrigued me, so I wrote him and told him I would love to come out there. I told him I was an electrician of some note, could do a little bit of plumbing and anything else that I thought would persuade me to let me come. So I reckon he felt sorry because he invited me to come, and I spent an unbelievable summer at a medico-legal program for lawyers and doctors in Crested Butte, just as it was becoming a ski resort. I went fishing about every day, not because of my love of fishing, but because I needed something to eat. I met some really interesting people. Dr. Smith later represented Jack Ruby, who was Lee Harvey Oswald's assassin. Dr. Alan Guttmacher of the Planned Parenthood Federation was there for a time, along with J.D. Lee, who became president of the American Trial Lawyers Association, and Bond Holford, the lawyer for whom I went to work in D.C. and Maryland when I got through law school. I really developed my skill at hearts and bridge during law school. The lounge in the basement of Manning Hall always had a game going on, and I was a much better hearts player than a constitutional law student. The give and take of law school was most interesting to me. I enjoyed the mental exercise and the challenges that the law presents, and look forward to beginning the practice of law. The year before we took the bar, more than half of that class who took it had flunked. There was a lot of sweating going on in our crowd, but most of us got through okay. As I reflect on all of this, you can see that the scholastic aspects of Carolina haven't been overemphasized. To me, Carolina was about learning to live, and to do so with some degree of passion, interacting with all types and kinds of people. I was a product of a small agricultural town in the Old South, more fortunate than most because my father had been to college and my mother had a degree, and we had some small economic stability. But my Carolina experience was about the larger world and what you could do in it. And this isn't about politics. It's about the rule of law, the administration of justice, the quality of one's existence, about the guaranteeing of equal rights and opportunity, about accepting people far different from anything I had ever seen before for just who they were, and understanding that wealth didn't really make a person any better than anybody else. Just made him richer, that's all. Those 7 years were golden. It was after Korea, before Vietnam. It was a time when the old guard and the world was changing. I guess for the better, it sure was for me. So that's really what it was about for me. A joyous, compelling journey that was great fun. And by the way, I did learn a little something. Thank you.